phone so that she can be a part of our second show. And we're excited. We have our first guest joining us today at about a quarter after. We are going to have Ruth Riddick join us by phone from her training studio, actually, in New York City. She's a recovery coach and trainer in the area, and has both a state and national reputation as really one of the premier thought leaders in the recovery movement. And she'll be joining us to talk about a phenomenal concept that people in recovery can use and do use, called the stages of recovery. It's a concept that helps people really take a look at exactly where they are today and create a bit of a vision for the future of what recovery might look like in the first year, in the second year, in the 10th year, and sets actually some developmental goals and challenges and tasks that people need to complete to really build and expand their own definition of recovery. So we're looking forward to that. So let me start by saying hello to John. John, how are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Good. I'm doing well. So for those that don't remember, John Greer is our engineer, and he's also my nephew, which is much more important.
Yes.
And John and his family just within the last week or so moved to Rochester. So how's the first week gone?
Not too bad. Still been settling in, unpacking. Things have been kind of crazy, but we've been moving along.
Yeah, we really need to get on your folks about getting the house set up a little bit quicker.
It's been going fine so far.
It's kind of messy when I picked you up today. So John is going to be joining us each week and doing our technology and running the board, because that is definitely not a strength of Lori or myself. And in the studio also with us is Mike Yates. Thank you very much, Mike, for being here and helping us getting started on WAYO. And you are listening to WAYO-LP Rochester. Before we bring our guests on, let's do a little business here, because we are in the middle of the yearly fundraising drive for WAYO. This is a completely voluntary run radio station, hosts about 100 different shows, 200 volunteers. Just if you look at our calendar, an amazing cross-section of topics and shows and subjects that are broadcast from this room over the course of the week. And we need your help. We're looking for folks who would like to donate. You are welcome to donate to WAYO in general. Please feel free, if you are a fan of any of the shows, to donate in the name of those shows, including ours. We would love to hear from you. In terms of making a donation in the name of Recovery Coach University Radio, what you need to do is go to donate.wayofm.org, and there you can make donations of any size and shape that fit your budget. You can do a one-time donation. It can be a reoccurring donation. Any and all is appreciated and helpful in keeping this radio station on the air. And needless to say, Lori and I are incredibly grateful, as WAYO has given us a platform to share with all of you our thoughts on the recovery world. There are actually some perks if you donate, everything from a sticker pack to a specifically created WAYO coloring book and a limited edition 45 adapter designed by Drew Tetz and Sabra Wood. Go to the website again, donate.wayofm.org, and there's more information, and we'd appreciate any and all help. So thank you in advance for that. So what are the stages of recovery? Well, there are a variety of different thoughts out there, philosophies about how people go through recovery from day one throughout the rest of their lives. And the stages of recovery that we're going to be talking about today with Lori and Ruth are just one manifestation of a way to think about, all right, I come into recovery, it's my first day. And again, as we talked about in our first show, we are believers in the philosophy of multiple pathways of recovery. So whatever a person's pathway is, they decide today is the day that I'm going to make some changes. what are some things that I need to think about? What are some of the steps along the way that are going to benefit me? And in my role as a recovery coach with my clients, I'm constantly talking with them about how to expand their definition of recovery. That for many people, when recovery starts, first step is simply, how do I stop the use of whatever substance I've been using or alter the pattern of the use of the substance I'm using? And that is obviously an incredibly important step and primary, but it's just that. It is a first step. And now people get to decide, once I've done that and I put some things into place, some mechanisms and supports and accountabilities in place to help me do that, what else? And what we're going to talk about today is a model of recovery that goes through five different stages, starting from day one and actually going up through year 10 to 15, 10 years or more, of some benchmarks, some flags to keep an eye out on, a way to potentially measure what recovery is for you, something to say, okay, today I achieved this. All right, what would be my next step in strengthening and expanding my definition of recovery? So stage one is simply something called stabilization. And in stabilization, this is usually, again, first year of recovery, and stabilization is defined as firmness of purpose and character. And I'll give you an idea of some of the tasks inherent in stage one. Simply, learning about addiction. This is one of those diseases that we know that when people get treated, one of the greatest interventions is just some basic education. What are you up against? I would invite people, if you are interested, to go to, you can Google the website for the Academy of Addiction Medicine. The Academy of Addiction Medicine on their website has one of the best definitions of what addiction is. And it's a definition that is based on the most up-to-date research, especially neurological research, of exactly what is going on in the pleasure centers of our brain that goes a little haywire, that creates that obsessive-compulsive component of addiction. So we know that for people in early recovery, and I do a lot of this, again, in my role as a recovery coach, simply just educating people about what they're up against. And a very big part of education these days is teaching people what it's not. Because so much of what goes around in our culture under the guise of education and fact about addiction is just not true. So things come up like, we're having a conversation just the other day with somebody about, is it truly not a person's choice? It must be a choice for people to use a substance. And a lot of folks who struggle with addiction, part of their struggle is, on some level internally, they believe that. And inherent in that, if I'm making this choice, there must be something, again, inherently wrong with me, inferior or inadequate about me. And so one of the greatest first tasks is to simply help people understand what it is and what it isn't that they are dealing with. And that addiction or substance use disorder, which is the medical term, is a disease of the reward centers of the brain. There are multiple components to it in terms of what creates it. In fact, there are some out there who would argue that when we call addiction or substance use disorder a disease, while some people do take offense at that because they view it as different than other diseases, that it is actually in some ways a more complex disease than many other diseases. So I always equate things. I'm a cancer survivor. I had colon cancer at age 40. And I do not minimize cancer, and I do not minimize how many people die from the disease of cancer. But from a medical standpoint, cancer is pretty easily explained. It is somewhat easily explained why it showed up in me at age 40. And the treatment was pretty straightforward. They cut me open, they cut it out, and thank God I was good to go. What creates substance use disorder, the active disease state of substance use disorder in an individual, the factors that go into just what puts a person at risk are many. It could be anything from genetic to family to environmental to just a person's innate temperament and personality, social, how they cope with different emotion in their lives. There's a variety of factors that play a role in that that make it more complex than many other diseases. It is incredibly important for people in early recovery to understand this. Likewise, just as important for family members to understand this. So the stages of recovery that we're going to talk about today, there's a corollary for these with family members. Because in my work with family, there are family members I have worked with that their struggle with shame and guilt and embarrassment is often based on a lot of misinformation. It is based on things that other people tell them. But this is, for family members, this is a disease that exists in the dark. People do not like to talk about this. People do not share with other people in their lives. In fact, over the summer, I was at a conference, and I heard this wonderful, wonderful take on this. A gentleman, Phil Valentine, who's well-known in the recovery circles. In fact, he played a role in the stages of recovery that we're going to talk about today. He did a keynote at a conference that I was at, and he talked about the casserole quotient. And what he was talking about is when you think about in our communities, if someone in our family or family that we know goes into the hospital for a medical procedure, what do we all do for that family? We all show up with food. We all bring casseroles, or we bring pasta, or we bring salads. We show up and we support the family with food. We don't do that when we hear about a friend whose family member went into treatment for substance use disorder. We don't show up. We keep it quiet. We're afraid to show up. We're afraid to say anything. And so nothing happens. And the natural friend supports, peer supports, societal supports, community supports that tend to show up for families when they have family members who are ill do not show up when the issue and the disease is addiction. That needs to change. And so that education part for folks who are in recovery from substance use disorder and for their family members is key. And John, I just heard our phone ring.
Yes, let me bring it up and we'll get this started.
Good morning, is this Lori?
It is, can you hear me, Keith?
We can hear you, how are you?
Oh, awesome, and I've...
Oh, we lost you. Oh, there you are.
So we're happy to join you. Could you hear us?
I can hear you. Yes. Hello to everybody in class.
Great. So we will. Is Ruth with us?
Ruth is not with us yet. So we're waiting for her to show up. She was going to call in at 11:15. So we've got a few minutes until she does.
Great. Well, I'll just set a little context, and then you let me know how you would like to involve us. But we're here. I'm now on the third day. Day three, and I've got about nine people in the room with me, and we are just completing the stages of change. And so it's very appropriate that we're here with you today, and we know what Ruth is going to be focusing on. So thanks for including us.
Sure. We're glad you can be with us. And I had the pleasure of being with this class yesterday. And it is a pretty amazing group of passionate and committed people who are investing four full days of their time this week in the quest of becoming peer recovery coaches and making a really big difference in our community. So we have just spent the last couple of minutes, Lori, talking about, in general, about the stages of recovery, and I've been sharing with our audience a little bit about stage one and just even the importance of that first task of educating folks in recovery or in treatment, whether it be the person with the substance use disorder or family members, educating them about what they're up against, giving them the most up-to-date information about what substance use disorder is.
Yeah.
And I know in your work with families, that is one of the things that that you really focus on quite a bit.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm looking for that because I want my class to be on the part of the book. So in terms of stages of change, Keith, or stages of recovery?
Stages of recovery is what we've been talking about.
Yeah. So oftentimes when we meet with families, it's their loved one or themselves are in stage one, which is typically, I'm sure you've mentioned, the first year.
Yes.
And, you know, a lot of times people think, well, what's next? Like, what do we have to look forward to? So we're, you know, putting down the substance, or for a family member, is we're starting to begin to look at our own behaviors and make some adjustments in our own behaviors to learn to be more effective as family members. But this notion of, okay, so now what? So what happens when we get to year three? And I often share with my classes when we talk about stages of recovery that the first time or two when I started looking at stages of recovery, I was sort of like, okay, I guess this is good to know, but I don't really see the application of this. It wasn't until I met Ruth Riddick, who, of course, we're all going to have the pleasure of talking to in a few minutes, that it began to sink into me the value of looking at the stages of recovery, and that while it may not fit everybody's path, you know, journey, 100%, it was developed based on a very large population of people, you know, asking them to reflect on their own stages of recovery, from very early recovery to long-term recovery, and that for the majority of people, these things really resonated. And I see now that working with people in all stages of recovery is so exciting. And I mean, I think it's good for anybody, but to be able to look forward and look at the what's next in recovery is such a gift to be able to, you know, to share and help people to really find, discover, explore for themselves.
I would agree. It's also one of the really nice changes in the treatment and recovery world. I know when I entered the world 35-ish years ago, there was this general feeling that in early recovery, you don't talk with people about what's coming down the road, that you just keep this focus on, I'm going to use a very old colloquialism that they used in 35, 40 years ago, you just focus on put the plug in the jug and that's it. And what we now know, because we know more about change and we know more about how people approach change, is that from the get-go with people in early recovery, we can have this larger conversation of, as you said, what's next, what's down the road, what's the next stage, what's the next task. And it really works as this wonderful roadmap and guide for people around that concept of expanding their definition of recovery.
Absolutely. Ruth and I actually developed a little assessment tool around this to be able to work with our clients who are really interested in ways of bringing more purpose and meaning to their recovery. And, of course, we now share that with anybody who goes through our workshops with us. But it's just a great way for an individual to sort of identify where they feel that they fall in terms of the stages of recovery and look at the tasks in each of those stages and did I complete those tasks? You know, have I accomplished everything that there is to accomplish in this phase of recovery? Or are there areas that I want to continue to work on in order to really maximize my recovery? And we had a lot of fun kind of developing that tool and putting it to use with some of our own recovery clients.
Awesome. Well, speaking of Ruth, John, I understand we have Ruth on the line?
I believe so. We have a second call on the line.
Okay.
And yeah, we're guessing it's Ruth, and she's going to be introduced.
All right. Put her through.
She is through, I believe.
Ruth, are you with us?
I certainly am, Keith.
Good morning.
Good morning to you and to Lori. How great to hear both of your voices this morning.
And you.
All the way from Rochester down to Brooklyn. It sounds like you're in the room with us.
Well, one, we are so thrilled to have you join us. not only because it's you, but you get to be our first guest on this new show, and we couldn't be happier and more pleased. So let me introduce Ruth to our listeners. And first of all, you are listening to WAYO LP Rochester, and you are listening to Recovery Coach University Radio. My name is Keith Greer. My co-host Lori Drescher is on the line from our training studio over at Artisan Works, and we have with us today Ruth Riddick. And Ruth is a certified addiction recovery coach, recovery coach trainer, and is the president of Sobriety Together, the training, coaching, and mentoring practice that she established in 2004. Ruth has been a personal and organizational empowerment educator for 25 years and is recognized on the state and national level as a passionate and highly knowledgeable recovery coach professional, speaker, trainer, and advocate. Two of Ruth's signature programs include Mapping Recovery, the Recovery Coach Opportunity, and How to Coach Clients in Addiction and Recovery. This last workshop, approved by both the New York Certification Board, and this is close to my heart, also approved by the International Coach Federation, which is my professional organization. Ruth has been honored for recovery advocacy work by Karen Treatment Centers, Crossroads of Maine, and Irish America Magazine, and also serves as community outreach for the New York Certification Board. And I found a quote from you, Ruth, that I just want to share because I just think this speaks so wonderfully about who you are and your take on recovery. And the quote is, "It's a tremendous privilege to help people who want a career in recovery, several of whom I've also trained, and support those organizations looking to incorporate peer recovery into their continuum of care. It's clear that emphasizing recovery and engaging recovery coaches and peer advocates is having a positive impact. These peer recovery professionals deployed in treatment centers and out in the community are bringing the vital message of recovery, and recovery is what it's all about." Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Ruth Riddick.
Thank you, Keith. It's an absolute pleasure to be here, and congratulations to you and Lori for establishing this radio program. What a great initiative.
Well, thank you.
Keith, I should say that I'm joined in the room here by 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 peer recovery professionals in training. I'm broadcasting to you from the from TRTC, the Resource Training Center in beautiful Brooklyn, in New York City. And we're all absolutely delighted to be part of this Rochester-based initiative and to be talking about recovery, because, you know, it's all about recovery, basically. It's all about recovery.
It is all about recovery. So if
any of us were to quote Ruth Riddick, it would be those words that she just recited. It's all about recovery. And I have seen her get whole rooms of hundreds of people so energized around those simple words. So Ruth, it is a pleasure to be. I'm also here with a class that I'm in the middle of teaching. We're on day 3 of the Recovery Coach Academy, and I've got 10 folks in the room with me. And I don't know how this worked out, but we were exactly at the spot in our curriculum where we're going to talk about stages of recovery. So instead, we get to tune in and share this time with you, the expert on stages of recovery.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Lori, when I came into personal recovery first, and I really, what Keith said about, you know, putting the plug in the jug really resonated with me, because the 12-step groups that I joined were very much focused on putting the plug in the jug. And I needed to do that. I badly needed to do that. And I needed to be told to do that too. And I needed that very practical, one day at a time support to do it. But I also had this question about why? What's the purpose of this? What's it all about? I get it about putting the plug in the jug, because who wants to be so sick all the time? I get that piece of it. But beyond stopping being sick, what is there? You know, if you have a life that's second to none today, which, you know, sort of you hear a lot in the rooms, I want to know, what does that mean? What does that mean? Where are you going to be at 10 o'clock next Tuesday? And what are you going to be doing? And who are you going to be with? And how, you know, sort of, and how are you going to be having some fun? And is your time going to be productive? And, you know, are you going to be able to pay your bills? And what are you going to be wearing? And, you know, sort of, and all of that stuff, the stuff of your life. I want to know what the stuff of your life is. And, you know, sort of over time, I started to think about, you know, what we're talking about here after I put the plug in the jug is really the rest of my life. And, you know, we all know that we're not in charge of how long the rest of my life is going to be. But chances are the rest of my life is going to be measured in decades. What am I going to be doing with those decades? Do we have a vision for what that might look like? Do we have any roadmap for what that might be like? Do we have any language around what is recovery? We understand what is addiction. We understand the steps that we have to take to put our substance use disorder into remission. But do we have any language? Do we have any vision for what the rest of my life is going to look like? And, you know, sort of that's where, when I came across the stages of recovery model, it really spoke to me. The model originally was developed as a four-stage model that really sort of, you know, ended with a whole list of tasks complete. Until Phil Valentine, the executive director of CCAR, who was one of the earliest trainers of the Recovery Coach Academy, until Phil took a look at the model of the stages of recovery, and he said, and he's somebody who's been in, you know, sort of in recovery since, you know, so since Moses was a boy. Phil said, you know, sort of that recovery really is not something that's completed in that sense. Recovery is where I live, every day. And Phil says that, you know, sort of if I'm doing the tasks of recovery, over the stages of recovery, then I'm actually going to find that I'm living in a place that's all about gratitude, that's all about serenity, that's all about acceptance, and that these, if you like, spiritual qualities or spiritual values become the way that I'm living my life, and that I discover what my life's purpose is. And I don't just discover what my life's purpose is by doing some kind of diagrammatic exercise. I discover what my life's purpose is because I'm living in recovery every day. And my life begins to have a shape that's about recovery, that's about the values of recovery, that's about the tasks of recovery, and that's about the skills of recovery. And I become a person who is skilled in identifying who I am truly. I become a person who is skilled on following through on my word. I become a person who is trustworthy. I become a person who shows up. I become a person who is a non-BS zone. And that becomes the way that I live my life. And Phil Valentine says that, you know, sort of that this stage of recovery, which for him he identified as being somewhere around 11 plus years, he calls this stage of recovery fulfillment. When I came across the idea that there was actually a roadmap for getting to a place where I could live in recovery, in gratitude, in acceptance, and in serenity, I thought, yes, that's for me. Not only is that for me, but that's a vision that grasps my attention in such a way that makes it worthwhile for me to put the damn plug in the damn jug.
So the word that popped into my head, Ruth, as you were talking, is that this is a pathway, a map for really becoming a person of integrity.
Yes, and in integration is actually the fourth step in the roadmap, the map talks about how in stage four, we become so accustomed to living our recovery pathway that actually we're doing it automatically now. This is now who we are. Our recovery is integrated into our personalities, our very personalities. Recovery is integrated into the way that we look at the world and the way that we interact with the world and the way that we live in the world, one day at a time. And that integration and the integrity, that's all of a piece with that. Again, I think that so many of us who lost our path into when we fell into active substance use disorder, when we activated our substance use disorder, I would argue that this is actually what many of us were looking for. Mm. We're looking for a way to live where our insides could match our outsides, and our outsides could be as colorful as Carnival in Rio. And these are visions of recovery, and these are visions for where we can be, and these are visions that are perhaps as powerful as the disorder itself. I'm making a grand claim there. I don't know whether it is or it isn't, but I do know that if I'm not looking at the travel brochure, I'll never book the holiday. And I think the same thing is true here.
Wonderful.
So I'm just wondering, Keith, if we might bring in some of our participants into some of this conversation, because I see, I'm looking around me and I'm seeing some nodding heads and I'm seeing some smiling faces, and I'm just wondering if we would open up the conversation to include some of them.
That would be wonderful, and actually let me open it up even a little bit further. So for those that are just joining us, you are listening to Recovery Coach University Radio on WAYOLP Rochester, and we would love to have people participate in this conversation along with the folks that are in Ruth's training room and Lori's training room. You can text in questions and comments to area code 585-203-9296, or feel free to email us at rcu@wayofm.org, or you are more than welcome to leave a comment or a question on Lori and my Facebook page at Recovery Coach University on Facebook. So yes, please. Ruth, who in the room would like to join us?
Okay, folks, let's hear it. Let's hear it. Stages of recovery, a vision of recovery. What have you got for us, G?
Good afternoon, my name is G. I like stage two, the deepening stage. And what I get out of that is, you know, even though the stabilization stage is stage one, is you just first acquiring that knowledge and you're just getting into this recovery. But that stage two, that deepening stage, you know, for me is what worked, because it was, you know, about the change in the attitude and behavior, about, you know, recognizing that you know, the life that I used to live, like, it just comes to a point that I don't want it anymore. You know, and I really just start to take a self-introspective of me and the things that I need and the things that's good for me and how I can start to really enjoy life without doing the things that I used to do in the past. Mm-hmm. You know, so you know, this and the difference from the stages of change up to the stages of recovery, you know, is paramount. That's
beautiful. Ruth, I need to ask a favor from any of your folks in the room
sure.
who want to share that they get a little bit closer to the phone. It's a little bit of an echo when they're speaking to us from somewhere in the classroom.
Okay, great. We'll do, Keith. Thanks.
But that was wonderful. The deepening stage is so significant. The emotional detox and all of the tasks around starting to tolerate our feeling world are so important.
Yeah. Yes, and I see Jean nodding vigorously at that. Tolerating our feelings when, you know, sort of tell me if this is true for you, Jean. But I certainly remember that, you know, sort of that when I was active, that, you know, sort of I had two feelings. I was either, you know, hysterically happy, or I was furious mad. And I don't know if that's true for you, Edgy, but, you know, a nuance of feeling was not something I was able to do.
I guess I can agree with you to an extent that, you know, when I was in my substance use disorder, I really didn't recognize what those feelings were.
Mm.
You know, I just was going through the motions of the day, doing the things that I was doing, so on and so forth. It wasn't until I started to recognize and understand recovery and I got to that deepening point that I understood that I didn't want to go back to those old behaviors or those mm-hmm. old feelings. So that internal detox, not just the physical from the drug, but that spiritual and mental detox that I needed, you know, and that is what allowed me to deeply, you know, it deeply resonated within me that, you know something, I don't need this anymore.
Right.
You understand? So that's where it came from.
Great. Thank you so much, G. And Vanessa is sitting beside me here, Keith, and she wanted to get in on the conversation.
That would be great.
Hello. Good afternoon, Keith. Good afternoon. My discussion will be about stage four of integration. And it's all saying that it's about being a whole, like you acting on the knowledge and you following through. And then recovery is about forgiving yourself and also learning how to forgive others, because that's number one. If you don't think about yourself, how can you help others?
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct, Ruth?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think that self-forgiveness is up there somewhere around stage four,
yes,
as one of the tasks.
Integration, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. of integration. You know, sort of, and that's a real challenge. That's a real challenge, I think, for people in recovery, that we do need to have built a sense for ourselves that we are actually valuable and valued human beings, and that we can build up that level of self-worth that
yes.
we get to the point where we can forgive ourselves for being human.
Yeah, I would concur entirely, Ruth. I think when I think of folks I've worked with, many folks who've done all of that other work of asking for forgiveness from people, making amends, that last step of self-forgiveness is just so challenging for folks and just so incredibly important.
Mm-hmm.
And
I have a question. Can I ask a question here from our
yeah, go, Lori.
Studio in Rochester? Okay, but it's really my question to Ruth. So, Ruth, you know, I shared with you when I was first exposed to the stages of recovery, I was sort of like, okay, I guess this is interesting to know. And it wasn't until I really heard you engage around this topic that I started to get pretty serious about it. And as you know, I work with a lot of family members. And I think mm-hmm. that we can't discount the fact that family members also go through these stages of recovery. And when I share this and our little assessment tool that you and I developed together, Ruth, I sometimes get the question, and it was about the fourth stage integration that I think it was Vanessa was just speaking about. The last point on that, which is have fun and joy in life. And I oftentimes get the question, do you mean we don't get to have fun until we're 6 years or more into recovery? So what do you say to somebody about that?
Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. Well, I think it's a great question, and I've heard it many times. First of all, I think that let's look at the stages of recovery as a roadmap rather than something that's fixed in stone. It's a guide to tasks that we do need to accomplish, but you know we're going to be doing them in our own way. We're going to, we're going to have some points of progress. We're going to have some points where we're a little bit more stuck. We're going to have some points where we need some input, which is why peer recovery professionals can be so helpful at any point in the journey. But the question about having fun, again, I think that that one of the things that saves our lives is having a sense of humor, and I don't care how black that sense of humor is. I think it keeps us going. I think it's that whispering hope that keeps us going, that we have the ability to see beyond the straitjacket of our suffering. And in recovery, what we experience is a broadening of that sense of humor, a broadening of that sense of seeing the world as both intensely humorous and insane, but also of seeing the world as a safe place in which we can play. And that sense of safety, that sense of belonging, that sense of having the right to challenge the world from a place of security, that grows in recovery. I can't expect to have that all of a piece a week after I stop drinking, but I do carry with me throughout the process. I carry with me the seeds of it because I've already got some kind of sense of humor going. I've already got some sense of being able to see outside of the box. I've already got some sense of connection. And maybe it's just an old Marx Brothers movie. Whatever works for you to get you laughing and having fun. Being able to laugh, being able to have fun, is really symptomatic of feeling safe and at rest in the world. And that sense really does grow over time as we become more, as recovery becomes more integrated into the way that we do life.
Beautiful.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Absolutely.
If you're just
I'm sorry, Keith.
No, go ahead, Ruth.
When you're ready, I wanted to introduce Vlad, who's sitting beside me, and Vanessa and G and several others of our participants this morning, and I know that Vlad wants to contribute to the conversation at some point.
Awesome.
Good
morning, Vlad.
Good morning, Keith. Thank you for letting me share, letting me talk. It's funny, I agree with Ruth so much because, you know, when we're talking about these stages of recovery, we go through so much in our life, and some of these things are so painful that if we don't learn how to take a look at it and, just laugh at it and say, I made a mistake. Hey, things are going to get better. We're just going to cry. I've been in situations where, I really wanted to cry and I had to take a look at myself and say, just laugh at myself and say, look what I did to myself, like my friend G here, one of my peers, we came here and we realized that we know each other for many years. And you know, so many years ago, it's like I take a look at the things that we've been doing, and it's like such a complete change that, you know, without going to smart groups or anything, you know, I'm going to say with me, I'm going to keep it on the eye. You know, with my age being 47, feeling old today, but, you know, being 47 years old, so many things change. Like, I remember my wants, you know, my wants. I don't want these things no more. I don't want them. I know what my needs are. And, you know, I said this here, I think the other day, the decisions that we make, you know, decisions that I make, they affect the people that love me. You know, they affect the people that love me. And I'm really looking at the last stage, you know, fulfillment. Because coming from stabilization, you know, we come in and we're new and we're kind of like, wow, you know, is this going to happen? Is this going to work for me? Because, you know, I done been through it so many times and, you know, and got the short end of the stick, you know. And you know, yes, when you look at fulfillment, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. Mm. There is something to look forward to, you know. And I want to say that even if you don't have $1 million, even if you don't have a mansion and a yacht, you know, just to be sober and to wake up and not need anything, not to be in need of running and taking chances that will put you back in the penitentiary or will have you robbing from the people that you love. Because we know that, you know, if we rob somebody in the street, there's consequences that comes with that. But, you know, sometimes people are cowards, and, you know, when you're in addiction, you're going to rob from your family because your family loves you and your family's going to forgive you, you know. And it's really sad, but, you know, there is a light at the end of the tunnel, you know, living in gratitude and, you know, acceptance and serenity. It's just such a beautiful thing, you know, and it is a possibility, you know. It works not only on the clinical level, but also on the peer advocacy level, you know, because not everything is for everybody. And I believe not everybody is ready for everything, you know. Sometimes people might get scared of something and say, well, you know what, this is not for me. But if you offer them, excuse me, if you offer them and show them another way, another choice, it's a possibility that
yes,
they can
is.
Get to. Yes, thank you. It's
You're
a
well.
Possibility
Vlad.
They can get to. That they want. Yes. Mm.
So here's...
I think Vlad has brought us very nicely, I think, back to the family where Laurie was speaking from. The impact of the stages of recovery model on families. And I'm wondering if Laurie wanted to say some more about that, because that's really interesting.
Well, I was just listening. I think we were all listening pretty intently on, was it Vlad?
Yes, it was Vlad.
Yes. You know, thank you for sharing, obviously, from
thank
the
you.
Heart.
Thank you.
I think you beautifully just expressed, you know, just so well some of the stages of recovery and the idea that fulfillment actually is so possible. And I think as family members, we have to remember the same thing, that this is a process and we're not going to get to fulfillment on day one, but we can have a vision of fulfillment on day one and begin to look forward to all of those things as we work our own recovery program, our own
yes.
recovery process, that there's every day it's peeling the onion back and, you know, more and more joy. And it doesn't mean that we don't go back, because sometimes we go back. I still have those nights where I'm kind of obsessing about something I may have said or done that wasn't consistent with my recovery program, the way I want to be interacting and communicating
right.
and being in a relationship with my loved one. But we go back to self-forgiveness and say, tomorrow's another day. I'm going to
exactly.
try better.
Exactly, and it's okay.
Okay. But I wanted to, so thank you for that. And I also, if I could take this opportunity, we have a couple of questions as well as a comment here in our training studio in Rochester. Is this a good time? Can we share a couple of these things?
Go for it, Lori.
Okay. So first, a comment from one of the participants here, which is, Ruth, I was trying to define all week why I was here. You just became my advocate of optimism. To accept the changes recovery is bringing into my life. Thank you. Recovery is becoming integrative. It is my life. I'm falling forward, and I'm feeling fulfilled through the recovery process.
Fabulous. Thank you.
And then two questions. I'll give them both to you, and then you can decide how you want to respond. One is, and this is not a small question, and I think Vlad really helped us understand this one. Just how do you reach that final stage of fulfillment that for some of us may feel pretty daunting and pretty far away? How do we get there? And then the other question somebody asked, and a family member actually here, said, I'm concerned about the increase in honesty not happening until stage three. How do we hang on till then?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, these are all great questions. I'm inclined to, on your first question, you know, sort of how do we get there? Recovery is a process, not an event. And it's a process that we engage in on a daily basis. And I think that if we're doing today's work today, we arrive at milestones along the pathway. It's not that I'm directly setting my GPS. It's that I'm doing today's work today. And the GPS looks after itself if I'm doing today's work today. Or as they say in the rooms, you know, sort of when we celebrate milestones in the rooms, and the standard question is, oh my goodness, how did you get to 1 year? How did you get to 5 years? How did you get to whatever? The standard answer is one day at a time, one step at a time. And, you know, sort of, and that really works for me. I really like the wisdom of keeping it in today. And just because I'm focused on living in today, that doesn't mean that I don't have a framework. That doesn't mean that I don't have a roadmap. I do have frameworks. I do have a roadmap. But I'm focusing on doing the next right thing today. And then that adds up to changes in my life that bring me to recognizably different places. And that's what's laid out in the roadmap. And I don't force it. I just do today's work today.
Yeah.
I hope that's a satisfactory answer to the first question. The second question is about increasing honesty. And I approach this question the same way as I've learned to approach almost everything in recovery. Honesty is a skill. And I become skilled by practice. You know the old joke, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice, practice. To embrace in recovery, like honesty, like gratitude. These are skills. And I learn skills by practicing them. When we come into recovery first, for many of us, we've learned to navigate our dysfunctional lives by massaging the truth, shall we say. And for many years, for many of us, that was a necessary skill. And we got very good at it. What's being asked of us when we come into recovery is that we dismantle that skill, that we leave that skill in abeyance, and that we build a new skill, a new skill of honesty. And for many of us, when we start in recovery, when we start in the early stabilization stage, it really is baby steps. It's learning that when I tell my truth, that the world is not going to implode on me. And that for every time that I can be honest, where there isn't a bad consequence, I learn to become safer in the world. You actually need to feel very safe in the world to be able to be rigorously honest. And the world is not a safe place for a lot of us for a lot of the time. So we only build that sense of safety incrementally or slowly by practicing, pushing the boat out a little, seeing that I'm still afloat, pushing it out a little bit more, seeing that I'm still afloat, pushing it out a little bit more, seeing that I'm still afloat. So that by the time I come to some of the stage three, maybe, I have a lot of experience of testing whether it's safe to be honest and finding that, yes, it is safe to be honest. So if I've discovered that it's safe to be honest, then I can start pitching my tent and saying, okay then, maybe I can commit to this honesty thing. It's not going to trip me up. It's not going to kill me. It's not going to destroy me. It's safe for me to be honest. I have enough experience now in recovery of being honest to be able to say that it's safe to be honest. Therefore, I can feel comfortable about committing to a deeper level of honesty. So that's why that increasing commitment to honesty is a little bit later in the process. It's a skill. I need to build my skill.
Ruth Riddick, that was wonderful, and we cannot thank you enough for joining us today. We're getting close to the end of the show. So a last thought from you, Ruth, on anything and everything related to recovery.
Thanks so much, Keith. Thanks so much, Laurie. So lovely to spend time with you always. I'm going to ask if you can come and visit us in Middletown, New York, on a week from Friday. That's Friday, November the 9th, when we are going to have the most extraordinary one day together at the Holiday Inn. Phil Valentine, co-author of The Stages of Recovery. Phil Valentine, you know, as one of the co-authors of the Recovery Coach Academy and as the executive director of CCAR. Bill Valentine and Carlo Di Clemente, the co-author of The Stages of Change model, will be in conversation together for a whole day at the Holiday in Middletown. It's going to be an absolutely wonderful day. Breakfast, lunch, continuing education credits. Come and join us, do please. Details at the asapnys.org website. And that's Phil Valentine and Carlo Di Clemente talking about recovery a week from tomorrow. Great to have you there.
Beautiful. And for folks who maybe have not heard of those two folks, those are two significant heavy hitters in the recovery world. And the Stages of Change model is a cornerstone of the Recovery Coach Academy training. So Ruth Riddick and class, again, thank you so much for joining us and sharing with us your perspectives and your experiences. We just can't thank you enough, and we wish you all well.
Thanks, Keith.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And partner, how is everybody doing over there at Artisan Works?
Well, we just want to say thank you to Ruth and thank you to your class for joining us for this hour. What do you guys say?
Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Great chatting with you. I'm going to try to get there if I can, if there's any way I can on the 9th. And
it's
I know you probably
story.
Need to do a commercial, don't you?
What's that?
Don't you need to do some kind of a commercial? Don't you need to do some kind of a commercial?
Well, we already did. I did it when we started the show, knowing that we would want to take as much time as we could with Ruth. So we are about to call it a second show. Thank you so much for all of you who listened in and joined us. We will be back here next Thursday morning at 11 a.m. And in the studio with us, we're going to have several folks in the Rochester area who are actually presently working as recovery coaches, who will share with us a little bit of their experience and as recovery coaches doing the work out there in the world. So, again, thank you, everybody, for listening in. Thank you so much, Ruth Riddick and Lori Drescher in class. And, John?
Yes.
Have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you.
Everybody, have a great week, and we'll see you next week.